A bartender once told Hugh McLeod he was wasting perfectly good business cards. McLeod had been sketching tiny cartoons on the backs of them, odd, irreverent drawings that made no commercial sense whatsoever. Friends thought it was a quirky habit at best, a symptom of creative delusion at worst. Fast forward a few years, and those wasted cards became the foundation of a creative empire that would influence everyone from startup founders to Fortune 500 executives. Here's the uncomfortable truth about original ideas. They don't arrive wrapped in validation. They show up alone, awkward, and utterly unconvincing to everyone except you. When Airbnb's founders pitched staying in strangers' homes, investors laughed them out of rooms. When Netflix suggested streaming would replace DVDs, Hollywood executives dismissed it as fantasy. Your revolutionary idea won't feel revolutionary at first. It'll feel lonely, strange, and possibly insane. The resistance you face isn't personal, it's structural. Your friends can't see your vision because it doesn't fit their mental map of who you are. Your colleagues resist because your idea might diminish their expertise or shift power dynamics. Learning to trust that quiet, persistent inner voice when everyone else thinks you're misguided isn't just important, it's the entire game. We waste energy reverse engineering successful strangers' achievements as if success were a recipe. It's not. What's liberating is finding something uniquely yours, not because it's commercially brilliant, but because it expresses something authentic. When McLeod started his business card cartoons, the format was absurdly limiting. Tiny, disposable cardstock, no grand vision, no business plan. Yet complete creative sovereignty, creating without commercial angles or gatekeepers, became the secret ingredient that drew people in. Consider David Chang building Momofuku around ramen noodles, or Humans of New York beginning as simple street portraits. The power wasn't in revolutionary concepts, but authentic execution. Here's the paradox. The more your idea belongs solely to you, the more freedom you have to create something that genuinely resonates. People aren't drawn to content. They're drawn to sovereignty, to experiencing something real and uncompromised. Chase trends and you enter crowded territory where your voice gets lost. Stake out territory only you can claim and you create space for authentic connection. Creating anything worthwhile takes far longer than anyone admits. Success rarely hinges on talent. It's about time, effort, and stamina. 90% of what separates successful creatives from unsuccessful ones is willingness to invest thousands of hours with no guarantee of reward. When asked if he worried about copycats, McLeod would reply, "Only if they can draw more of them better than I can." His edge wasn't the concept. It was thousands of hours developing his style. Keeping your day job makes strategic sense. It provides stability while removing financial pressure that forces compromise. J.K. Rowling wrote Harry Potter in cafes on government assistance. Stephen King wrote in his trailer's laundry room after teaching shifts. Their day jobs didn't diminish creativity. They provided stability for it to develop naturally. Ed Sheeran played over 300 shows before breaking through. Sarah Blakely sold fax machines door-to-door for 7 years while developing Spanx. Find those extra hours that belong only to you. Consistent effort compounds in ways sporadic brilliance never can. Nobody discovers you. They find people who've already built something valuable. When McLeod received an early publishing deal, he declined because the company wanted ownership without equal commitment. The internet eliminated gatekeepers. You can now build your own audience directly. When McLeod found the right publisher, he already had an audience and income stream. Print was just a bonus. Musicians reach fans through streaming. Writers connect through blogs. Filmmakers distribute online. Success isn't about waiting to be discovered. It's building something so compelling that partners want to collaborate on your terms. This requires patience, but preserves your most valuable asset, sovereignty over your work. Everyone is born creative. We start with crayons in kindergarten, making art without self-consciousness. But somewhere along the way, those crayons are replaced with algebra textbooks. we're taught to be practical, to focus on marketable skills. The creative urge that resurfaces later isn't something new. It's that same childhood voice saying, "I'd like my crayons back, please." This voice arrives uninvited, often at inconvenient times. You don't know if you're any good, but you think you could be. And that possibility both excites and terrifies you. The adult voice immediately worries about publishers and backing. But your creative voice doesn't care. It wants you to make something honest. If you try to fit some hypothetical market, you'll fail. If you make something true to your vision, you have a chance. Your creative voice didn't return because you need money or fame. It came back because your soul depends on it. Ignore it and it will eventually die, taking a chunk of your authentic self with it. Picasso said, "Every child is an artist. The problem is how to remain an artist once we grow up." The solution isn't silencing your adult voice, it has wisdom too, but ensuring it doesn't drown out the creative voice connecting you to your authentic self. Creative people juggle two jobs, the sexy, fulfilling kind and the kind that pays bills. Sometimes one job covers both, but this is rare. This duality isn't something to transcend, it's a fundamental reality of creative life. Once you truly accept this divided life, really accept it, not just grudgingly tolerate it, your career often accelerates. People who refuse this division, insisting on quitting day jobs to immediately become renowned artists, rarely make it. They burn through savings, become desperate, and often compromise their vision more severely than if they'd maintained balance. This tension exists even for highly successful people, the struggling waiter writing screenplays and the movie star choosing between artistic projects and commercial franchises face the same fundamental challenge at different magnitudes. Mack Lloyd combined cartoons and blogging, the sex, with his corporate day job, the cash, developing his creative voice without pressure for immediate commercial success. The key isn't eliminating this tension, but managing it productively. Use your cash work to fund creative freedom while protecting your sex work from commercial pressures. The most important thing a creative person can learn is where to draw the red line separating what they're willing to do from what they're not. This isn't about being difficult. It's about protecting your creative sovereignty and authentic voice. Art inevitably suffers when money enters the equation. The more you need it, the more control you surrender. What aspects of your work are not negotiable? What elements define your unique voice? For some, it's maintaining creative control. For others, it's refusing content that contradicts their values or preserving techniques that define their style. Creative work always involves compromise, but be crystal clear about which compromises you can live with and which would destroy what makes your work meaningful. Your red line is the boundary between creative survival and creative death. Draw it carefully, communicate it clearly, and defend it like your artistic life depends on it, because it does.